We're moving to question time in Senator Cash.
Thank you. And my question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. Senator, over the last 4 weeks, at least 147 detainees have been released into the Australian community, including pedophiles, murderers, rapists and a contract killer. The result is that just over the last few days, we have now seen 5 detainees arrested by police, including a serial sex offender being charged with an alleged indecent assault of a woman in South Australia, and the ringleader of a child exploitation gang being arrested for allegedly contacting minors. Why is it, because of your failures, Australians are less safe now under this Labor government?
Thank you, Senator Cash. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President, and I thank the Senator for her question. And I again remind those opposite that the decision to release was a decision of the High Court imposed upon the government, and as a consequence, the government has put in place a range of measures, including those which have now been passed by the Parliament, which are clearly aimed at ensuring we do all we can to keep Australians safe. And I would think that Senator Cash would understand that the government is dealing with two pieces of legislation, or two High Court decisions, which have struck down laws which were applicable under you. And in fact, certainly in relation to the citizenship cessation. In fact, Mr Dutton has presided over not one but two unconstitutional laws. And the facts are, as much as Senator Cash wishes to interject repeatedly, that no amount—
Senator Cash.
As much as she wishes to interject repeatedly, the Australians are not kept safer by laws which fail. Australians are not kept safer by laws which fail, and your laws failed. That is the reality. Now, it is the case. It is the case that this is
order.
It is the case the government has put in place four layers of protection. They include preventative detention, community safety supervision orders, electronic monitoring devices and curfews, and stringent visa conditions. And we will continue to do all we can. Well, I'll take that interjection.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Cash, first supplementary.
Thank you. In approximately 3 weeks, just before Christmas, Abdul Nasser bin Bricker is due to be released. Revelations in this chamber last night reveal that the Attorney-General failed to apply to the court for a continuing detention order. It appears the only possible outcomes are that Australia's most notorious terrorist will be released with conditions, or that he will simply be released into the Australian community. Why is it, because of your failures,
order,
Australians are less safe now under this Labor government?
Thank you. Senator Brown. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. It is remarkable the way in which the opposition seemed to forget that the laws that we have had to pass, the situation in relation to citizenship cessation, has become an issue because Peter Dutton put in place laws which failed.
Correct.
It's amazing, isn't it? Senator Cash thinks that repeated interjections can cover up the fact that this was Mr Dutton's
Senator
mess.
Senator Cash, you
this
asked
was Mr
question.
Dutton's mess. You know, the reality is the Leader of the Opposition and Senator Cash will never learn that you don't keep Australians safe with laws.
Order. I have called order almost continuously. I would ask senators to listen in respectful silence. Minister Wong.
The High Court made clear that Mr Dutton's laws failed, and
thank you,
the
Minister.
Government
the time
has been
for
working to fix
expired.
Up.
Senator Cash, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Labor's national security chaos has brought new uncertainties and new safety risks to Australians. Will your government apologise to Australians for your catastrophic failure to keep them safe?
Order across the chamber. I am not calling the minister until there's order. Senator Brown, I've called you. Minister.
Everyone in this place wants Australians to be safe.
Senator Cash, I've called you to order more times than I can request. Senator Cash, you're not in a debate with me. I'm asking you to listen in respectful silence. Minister Wong.
Thank you. Everyone in this chamber wants Australians to be safe.
Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Senator Cash, I have called you to order. I had just finished calling you to order and asked the minister to continue her answer. I'm requesting that you listen in respectful silence. Minister Wong. Senator Stirl, it applies to you. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. Everyone in this place wants Australians to be safe. Everyone in this chamber wants Australians to live in safety. We understand
Senator
this
McGrath.
Is...
Senator McGrath. Order. Minister Wong, please continue. Order. Order. Senator McGrath, I've called you three times. Minister Wong.
I'm very happy not to sit down if those opposite stop interjecting. I mean, the reality is you don't want to hear the answer. So here we go again. You don't want the answer, do you? You don't want the answer. You really don't want the answer.
Minister Wong. Order. Order. I have Senator Hume on her feet. Senator Hume.
Thank you, Madam President. With only 7 seconds to go, the question on relevance, the question was, will
Senator
the government
Hume.
Apologise?
Senator
None
Hume.
Of that.
Senator
will the
Hume.
Government apologise?
Senator Hume, I'm
or should
not
we not
inviting
interrupt?
You to debate. Senator Hume. I've reminded senators yesterday and the day before that when you stand for a point of order, it's not an invitation to make a statement. The minister is being relevant. Minister Wong.
Those opposite always fail to remind Australians
Thank you,
that
minister.
Mr
the time
Dutton
for
presided
has
over.
Expired. Senator Grogan.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Senator Wong. This week, the good friend of Israel, United States Defence Secretary Lloyd Austin, said that protecting Palestinian civilians in Gaza is both a moral responsibility and a strategic imperative. Can the minister please respond to Secretary Austin's comments?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Grogan for her question. And what I would say on this issue is that the future for both Israelis and Palestinians depends on a just and enduring peace and a two-state solution, and clearly the status quo is failing all. As I have said before in this place, we mourn every innocent life which has been lost in this conflict, and we express our condolences to all families and communities affected by the violence. We unequivocally condemn Hamas's terror attacks on Israel on October 7. The heinous attacks of sexual acts of sexual violence perpetrated in those attacks and the reneging on the recent truce arrangements. We call for Hamas to immediately and unconditionally release all remaining hostages. We have clearly affirmed Israel's right to defend itself as guaranteed by the UN Charter, and we have said in doing so, Israel must respect international humanitarian law. Civilians and civilian infrastructure, including hospitals, must be protected. More than 60% of residential dwellings in Gaza are reported by the United Nations to have been destroyed or damaged. Nearly eight in 10 civilians have been displaced. Civilians who fled northern Gaza are now being pushed further south, and as the conflict spreads south, there are increasingly few safe places to go. The world has witnessed a harrowing number of civilian deaths, including children. This must not continue. US Secretary of State Austin is an expert in urban warfare against terrorists from experiences fighting ISIS and, like us, is a steadfast friend of Israel. And this week he shared this wisdom. He said, if you drive the civilian population into the arms of the enemy, you replace a tactical victory with a strategic defeat.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Grogan, first supplementary.
I understand that more than 2,200 previously registered Australians have left Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories, including more than 900 Australians and their families who've left Israel on Australian government-assisted departure flights, and 143 Australians, permanent residents and their families, who've left Gaza. Given those attempts to misinform Australians about the situation for people trying to leave Gaza, can the minister explain the facts, please?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President, and thanks to Senator Grogan for a very important question, because at a time that the government has been working to bring Australians together, we see again Mr Dutton seeking to inflame tensions and to divide people, and making claims which were not correct in relation to those permanent residents and Australians. Let me be very clear. The Gaza border is controlled by Israeli and Egyptian authorities who have put tight limits on who can cross. Meeting requirements for a visa does not mean an entitlement to consular assistance, nor does it mean other authorities will automatically allow people to leave where they are. Gaza border authorities are approving lists submitted by foreign governments, approving foreign nationals and immediate family members, and we are prioritising Australian citizens, permanent residents and immediate family members. And as Mr Dutton knows, all people who obtain Australian visas are subject to appropriate identity, security and character checks.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Grogan, second supplementary.
Can the minister update the Senate on efforts to find a pathway out of this conflict? And what is the government doing to support a lasting peace?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Wong.
Thank you. President, the decision by Hamas to break the recent pause in hostilities was a grave setback. The pause had allowed for the release of more than 100 hostages and supported an increase in humanitarian access to affected civilians. Australia wants to see this resumed, and we support international efforts towards a sustainable ceasefire. A statement that I made with the French Foreign Minister, Catherine Colonna, earlier this week. We know this cannot be one-sided. Hamas must release all hostages, stop using Palestinian civilians, stop attacks on Israel and release all hostages. Australia supports President Biden's five principles for post-conflict Gaza, including no forcible displacement of Palestinians or reduction in territory, and no use of Gaza as a platform for terrorism. I also advise the Senate that Assistant Foreign Minister Watts has been asked to travel on behalf of the government to the region to lay the groundwork for deeper ministerial engagement.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Mackenzie.
Thank you. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. At the last election, the Australian Labor Party said in its policy platform, "We want rural and regional Australians to receive a fair share of the prosperity they create. In return, they also deserve the same standard of education, healthcare, and community services as their fellow Australians." Minister, since Labor was elected, you've put a handbrake on agricultural productivity, fumbled major trade treaties, introduced a new truckies tax, a new fresh food tax, and threatened the family farm with superannuation changes. Minister, is this what the Prime Minister meant when Labor promised to deliver regional Australians a fair share of prosperity they create? And why are regional Australians less prosperous now than when you were elected?
Thank you, Senator Mackenzie. Minister Wong.
Congratulations to Senator Mackenzie on getting your question. although I noticed that she hasn't asked a question of Senator Watt, and I have to say to her, you should have the courage to ask the Senator a question about many of these issues. I'm very happy to answer it. I'm very happy. Would you like to stand up and say something?
Order. 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 Senator Hume, resume your seat. This is
irrelevance. That was an answer that was nothing other than abuse of the person asking the question.
Senator
when
Hume,
it was directed
resume your seat.
To the
resume your seat. Order. Senator Hume, resume your seat. I just reminded you the last time you stood on a point of order not to go into a statement, which is exactly what you did. I have said to all senators in this place, order, Senator Wong. If you interject, the minister is entitled to take the interjection. I would suggest that if everyone is serious about Senator Mackenzie getting an answer to her question, they listen in silence. Minister Wong.
I would have thought that congratulating Senator Mackenzie on getting a question was hardly an unfair thing to say, but
If she wants me to withdraw it, she knows I'm always happy to withdraw. But I would make this point. This government has invested an additional $3 billion in the agricultural portfolio, $1 billion more for biosecurity, for the first time sustainable biosecurity funding, something you could never deliver. This government has worked to remove the trade impediments with China, have a discussion with barley producers,
Senator Wong,
with the barley industry.
Minister Wong, please resume. Senator Mackenzie, you have asked your question. You are interjecting, and your voice is louder than the minister's who's on a microphone. I would ask you to listen in silence, Minister Wong. Minister Wong, please continue.
Thank you. We have worked to remove the trade impediments with China, and I have met with many in the agricultural industries, particularly our barley industry. And I'll tell you what, they're pretty happy with the additional money that they are getting from those exports.
Fixing your mess again.
What was the figure, Senator Watt? $6 billion more into the Australian economy as a consequence of those trade impediments being lifted. And let's talk about healthcare. Let's talk about healthcare and the work this government is doing to increase bulk billing, to increase support into the regions for regional doctors, something you could never deliver. You know, you trumpet your support for regional Australia, but Labor is the one delivering to regional communities.
Order. 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 Right. Senator Mackenzie, first supplementary.
Since being elected, Labor has deliberately stuck the boot into regional Australia and our farmers, the backbone of our agriculture sector,
Senator
are actually
McKenzie,
hurting.
Senator Mackenzie, resume your seat. Order on my right. Senator Mackenzie is absolutely entitled to ask her question in silence. Senator Mackenzie, please continue.
Thank you for your protection, Madam President. Destroying prime agricultural land to make way for wind turbines, solar panels and transmission towers. Our rural roads and regional communities have been stripped of funding, and our hospitals have had doctors diverted to the cities. Is this what the PM meant when he said Labor, under Labor, regional Australia deserved the same standards?
Thank you, Senator Mackenzie. Minister.
Well, President, so much in that question which wasn't correct. So much in that question which was not correct. And so much hyperbole from the party.
Senator Henderson.
The party that coasts on representing regional
Senator
Australia
McGrath.
While not delivering for regional Australia. You don't deliver for regional Australia. Did you support more bulk billing? Did you support more bulk billing in regional Australia? No, you don't. Did you support more measures to get medical workforce
Senator
into
McKenzie.
Regional Australia? No. You come
Davey.
In here, Senator Mackenzie, and pretend that you're a champion for the regions, but you don't deliver the policies that actually support regional communities. And no amount of hyperbole and
Senator
no amount
McKenzie.
Of rhetoric and walking around with a hat on makes you a representative of regional Australia.
Order across the chamber. I have called order. Senator Ayres, I should not have to single out particular senators to stop their rude interjecting. Senator Mackenzie, I'm going to invite you to ask your second supplementary, and then I'm going to invite you to not interject. Second supplementary.
The Prime Minister in this Labor government is in the process of banning live sheep exports, has signed up to a global methane pledge, and has forged ahead with water buybacks without socioeconomic safeguards, destroying the livelihoods of farmers, workers and our communities. Minister, why has Labor broken its promise of prosperity to rural and regional Australians, and when will the PM live up to his promise that he made prior to the election?
Thank you, Senator Mackenzie. Minister Wong.
Well, I again go back to it. Additional $3 billion for agriculture, $1 billion for biosecurity for the first time, sustainable biosecurity funding.
Senator
Sustainable biosecurity funding. I can remember Mr. Joyce years ago telling us how important biosecurity was. What he was engaged in was a lot of media stunts. It's a Labor minister who's never delivered sustainable biosecurity funding. You didn't deliver it in 9 years. And then, as I said, trade with China, additional support for regional communities when it comes to healthcare, and, of course, additional farm workers to deal with labour shortages. Senator, this government does care about regional communities. We are doing the work to support regional communities. I know that hurts, Senator McKenzie. I know that hurts. But the reality is we delivered more than the National Party ever could.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Just a moment, Senator Rice. Senator McGrath, I have called you a number of times this question time. You were absolutely disrespectful and disorderly. I called you to order and you were so loud you didn't even hear me. I am asking you to remain silent. Senator Rice.
Thanks, President. My question is to the Foreign Minister, Minister Wong. Minister, you have said that the State of Israel must exercise restraint and protect civilian lives in Gaza and must comply with international humanitarian law. Minister, it's estimated that over 70% of the more than 16,000 people killed in Gaza have been women, children and the elderly. Overnight, the UN Secretary-General urged members of the Security Council to press for a humanitarian ceasefire to avert a humanitarian catastrophe, saying, amid constant bombardment by the Israel Defence Forces, I expect public order to completely break down soon, rendering even limited humanitarian assistance impossible. The UN Human Rights Chief has warned of a heightened risk of atrocity crimes. Minister, will Australia join the call of the UN and aid organisations for an immediate and permanent humanitarian ceasefire?
Thank you, Senator Rice. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. Thank you to Senator Rice for her question. What I would say to Senator Rice is I hear from how she asked that question, how important this is to her, and it's a serious question. I sought in my first answer to set out the many issues which have to be considered in the context of this humanitarian crisis in the aftermath of the heinous October 7th attacks. The Senator would know from what I've said in this place that we have made a number of points. I released a statement with the Foreign Minister of France when she visited this week, which went through some of those principles that I outlined in the answer earlier. We have called for Israel to respect international humanitarian law. We have called for civilians to be protected and civilian infrastructure. And we have called for safe and unimpeded humanitarian access to be increased. We have also said that the number of civilian deaths, including children, has been harrowing and it cannot continue. We have said we want to see the pause resumed and Australia supports international efforts towards a sustainable ceasefire and that we recognise this cannot be one-sided. I appreciate that this may not be as far as some might want. It is further than others might want.
Order.
This is a situation which has been very difficult for the Australian community, and I again urge all senators,
thank
and
you,
I appreciate
Minister,
Senator Rice did, to ensure their
expired.
Time is...
Senator Rice, second supplementary, I beg your pardon, first supplementary.
Given the calls of the UN Secretary-General overnight, given that, that Israel are clearly not complying with international humanitarian law, given the appalling deaths of civilians, why can't Australia join the calls of the UN for an immediate, permanent humanitarian ceasefire rather than support towards a ceasefire?
Thank you, Senator Rice. Order. Order. Order across the chamber. Senator Wong.
The language we use reflects the need for a ceasefire not to be one-sided, Senator. We know that hostages are still being held. We know that Hamas has no place in the future of Gaza, nor in any progress towards a two-state solution. Can I say, though, in using the words carefully that I do, does not diminish our concern for the numbers of civilian casualties that we are seeing. And as I said in my answer to the first question from Senator Grogan, we are seeing that there are increasingly fewer safe places for anyone in Gaza to go. And we have continued to reiterate the importance of international law, those principles of international law, which I've adverted to
earlier. Thank you, Minister. Senator Rice, second supplementary.
Minister, aid agencies actually say nowhere in Gaza is safe anymore. More than 80% of Gaza's population have left their homes, and humanitarian aid is not being delivered much further than the Egyptian border. Australia's given $25 million in aid to Gaza, with an estimated need of over $1 billion. Will Australia deliver an end-of-year gift to the people of Gaza of increased aid and work diplomatically with Israel to ensure it can be delivered to all in Gaza?
Thank you, Senator Rice. Minister.
Well, thank you. We didn't wait for Christmas to do those things. We made a $25 million pledge very early on in this conflict. And I've said publicly on a number of occasions, we stand ready to do more if there is more that... If the international community, if there is the capacity to deliver more aid and the international community calls for more aid, Australia stands ready to do more. We know what is happening in Gaza. The constraint in Gaza, as you wouldn't be aware, is access. And I come to the second part of your question. We didn't wait for Christmas to advocate, including directly with counterparts in the region, for humanitarian access. We have been doing that, and we will continue to do that. It's not a Christmas gift. This is the right thing to do because the humanitarian need is so dire.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Sheldon.
My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Industry, Senator Farrell. Minister, the vast majority of businesses do the right thing by their employees and ensure that they are safe at work. However, there is a small number of businesses that do the wrong thing to attempt to get an unfair competitive advantage by putting their workers' safety at risk. In those instances, workers across Australian industries look to the government of the day to ensure that they are safe at work. How is the Albanese government standing up for the safety of Australian workers?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Sheldon for his question, and I know he's made his life's work, the safety of Australian workers. It shouldn't have to be said, but every worker should be safe at work and return home at the end of the day. But as Senator Sheldon noted, sadly, some employers do the wrong thing and risk their workers' safety. Earlier today, Senator Cash rose in this place and outlined how on their side of politics they stand with employers. But on this side of politics, we stand with employers who do the right thing their workers. And the Albanese government wants to see the Australian industry, especially vital ones like manufacturing, grow from strength to strength, and we've delivered the policy settings for them to do so. But more importantly, we stand by workers' rights to be safe at work. That's why we have acted to improve worker safety by introducing new criminal offences of industrial manslaughter, expanding the functions of the Asbestos Safety and Eradication Agency to include silica, and better supporting first responders with PTSD. We stand with workers, we stand with employers who do the right thing, and employers who do the wrong thing by their workers should take this as a warning. If they risk the safety of workers through unsafe practices, we will take action.
Thank you, Minister Farrell. Senator Sheldon, first supplementary.
Minister, sadly, the former Liberal and National government rejected including industrial manslaughter and model OH&S laws, showing a blatant disregard for the safety of workers. How have today's laws to criminalise the offence of industrial manslaughter helped ensure the safety of workers across the Australian industry in the lead up to Christmas?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and can I thank Senator Sheldon for his first supplementary question. Sadly, far too many Australian families will be missing a family member this Christmas due to their loved ones passing away due to a workplace incident. This year, SafeWork reports that to the 23rd of November, there have been 144 workplace deaths. Last year, there were 195 workplace fatalities due to the traumatic injuries sustained in the course of work-related activity. Everyone has the right to be safe at work. And thanks to the changes that we have passed today, workers can be reassured that when there are workplace deaths due to employer failing to keep workers safe, those employers will now be held to account.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Sheldon, second supplementary.
And Minister, sadly, for too many workers have suffered also from silicosis as a result of work-related exposure to silica dust. What steps is the Albanese government taking to tackle silicosis to ensure workers are safe at work?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Sheldon for his second supplementary question. Silicate-related diseases like silicosis are cruel and untreatable, but they are preventable. After an alarming increase in the number of workers developing silicate-related diseases, the government is taking the necessary action to protect Australian workers. The Commonwealth is working in a cooperative and coordinated way with states and territories to work through how we act on the recommendations of Safe Work Australia. And today's legislation will now allow the Asbestos Safety and Eradication Agency to lead a whole-of-government and industry approach to ending the dangers of silica dust diseases. We're keeping workers safe and ensuring industry has the tool to keep them safe.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Tyrrell.
My question is for the Minister representing the Minister for Health and Aged Care, Senator Gallagher. In an announcement on the 13th of April 22, then-opposition leader Anthony Albanese and Shadow Health Minister Mark Butler said their proposed Medicare urgent care clinics will be open 7 days a week from at least 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. if Labor was elected. I was excited to read your government's 22nd of November media release that on December 11th the Devonport urgent care clinic will open, but its opening hours will apparently be 2 p.m. until 8 p.m., not 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. as promised. Minister, when will you correct the media release to say that the clinic will be open from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., or is your pre-election commitment a broken promise?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Tyrrell for the question and for her advocacy around healthcare services in Tasmania. As I updated the chamber this week, there are a total of 48 urgent care clinics which have opened this year. There's 58 that will be open by the end of the year. Rockhampton was the last one that opened. 51 providers have been announced. In relation to, I'm not sure if it's that clinic, although I'll take your word for it. In establishing them, there are a number where we are working with the providers in the setup where there are reduced hours, but that over time, we are working to ensure that they are open that extended period. This is a new model of care. It hasn't been done before. But where we've worked, where we in certain areas, whether it relates to workforce or presentations, there have been changes to the hours of operation based on those negotiations with the providers. But the expectation is that those clinics will be extended hours for that period, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. But the idea is to cover that evening and early morning, because many of the providers are actually providing a service because we partner with GP clinics or something like that. They are open from 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. But then when they close at 5 p.m., we've been looking to extend those hours. So there are a few clinics where we are working with providers around the operational hours. It has largely been at providers' request due to workforce issues. It's certainly not in relation to any commitment or support or funding from the government.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Tyrrell, first supplementary.
Thank you. The same media release said that Devonport's urgent care clinic will ease pressure on the local emergency department. Minister, if the point of the clinic's extended opening hours is to take pressure off the emergency department and the clinic is open for less than half the time promised, does your government believe that the pressure on Tasmania's emergency department has been eased?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. I don't have the Tasmanian data from in yet, but I did update the chamber on some that we'd been some of the early data that we'd been seeing in Logan and Ipswich, where the clinics have been open for a bit longer. But we have seen in Ipswich, for example, semi-urgent numbers or urgent or semi-urgent cases has dropped significantly, actually by 25% lower in September than it was in August.
Order. Order.
Than it was in August or July, and it's a similar story at the Logan Hospital with 10% fewer presentations in September. So this is something that we are hopeful for. Obviously, there are two aspects to it, taking pressure off emergency departments, but it's also about providing families and people with accessible health care that's bulk billed out of hours.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Tyrrell, second supplementary.
Well, I hope Queensland appreciates what they've got. I have seen reports saying that Tasmanians are being turned away from some urgent care clinics because demand exceeds daily patient limits. Tasmania's latest emergency department patient data shows an increase in emergency department presentations of 600 people for the month of October. Minister, does your government accept that more staff and funding are required to successfully assist Tasmania's dire health system?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Well, this government does accept that, and we inherited a broken system, which in 18 months we have significantly addressed areas of pressure, whether it be in bulk billing, urgent care clinics, and yesterday at National Cabinet there was an announcement of more investment in urgent care clinics because the early signs are that they are working. And in relation to the hospitals, a very big outcome of yesterday's meeting with state premiers was to work with state premiers on extra investment in the hospital system, particularly in small jurisdictions like Tasmania and the ACT, where there are fewer options than in some of the bigger cities. Our commitment through National Cabinet to be worked through over the coming months over the health reform agreement is to invest more from the Commonwealth into hospitals, to work with jurisdictions, to invest more in urgent care clinics to ensure that people are getting access to free and accessible health care.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Nambijinka Price.
Thank you. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. The last 18 months of the Albanese Labor government has seen the Labor Party spend $450 million on a failed referendum that unnecessarily divided Australians and was never going to achieve any practical outcomes to benefit Indigenous Australians or to close the gap. Does the Albanese government accept that all it's achieved to date is leaving Indigenous Australians more divided and further behind? Isn't it clear that Labor priorities have been completely wrong? And will you finally give a straight answer on whether Labor is now pursuing a nationwide treaty?
Good question, please.
Order. Order. Minister Wong.
Thank you. First, in relation to the referendum, Senator, I appreciate that you took a different view to many in this community, in the Australian community. I would point out you may say it is was wasted. We went to the election after having consulted with many Indigenous leaders who took a different view to the one you've outlined, and having a looked at and considered closely the statement from the heart and the process which led to that, and we made a commitment to people. The people of Australia that we would hold a referendum, and we did. So I think that is obviously we would have. There was a result that we accept. We recognise that requires a different path, and as Senator Ms Burney has said, that will be something this government continues to consult on. the way forward. So I would say to you that I hope that one of the things that we did come to in that referendum campaign is that whilst many people did not agree with a particular constitutional proposition, that...
Order.
Yeah, the majority. Well, we lost the referendum. We accept the referendum result. But what I'm saying is I hope that where there was cross-party support was for finding ways to close the gap and recognising the disadvantage that First Nations people face.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Nampijinkrapras, first supplementary.
15 out of 19 closing the gap targets are not on track. Systemic disadvantage continues, including tragic child and family violence. Given the policies of the Albanese Labor government are failing so miserably, will Labor finally agree to support the Coalition's call for a Royal Commission into the sexual abuse of children in Indigenous communities?
Thank you, Senator Nampijinkrapras. Minister Wong.
I think that this has been an issue on which there has been quite a number of discussions in this chamber, Senator. What I would say to you is this: I think the sexual abuse of children should be an issue above politics.
Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Order on my left. Minister, please continue.
And as others have said in this place, every child has a right to grow up safe and healthy, as has been said by many. Inside and outside of this place, we don't need another Royal Commission to tell us that concrete action is needed. And the government's focus is on the immediate issue of keeping children and women safe, of ending violence against women and children in one generation. And we have provided in the 23-24 budget some $589 million to support women and children's safety, including $262 million for First Nations women and children.
Senator Nampijinkrapras, second supplementary.
Labor's policies see about $32 billion in annual Indigenous-related funding, underpinning hundreds of organisations from land councils to specialist organisations. Given the policies of the Albanese Labor government are failing so miserably, will Labor finally agree to support the Coalition's call for an audit of all Indigenous policies and programs?
Thank you, Senator Nampijinkrapras. Minister.
Senator, I think I've had this question before from Senator Hanson or Senator Gallagher has, and I think the answer that was given was to outline the very many audits that have already occurred into First Nations or Indigenous community organisations and entities. I think that, again, of course, all of us want to make sure that money is spent where it is most useful and that we get change on the ground. What I would say is that we already see audits having been put in place. We will continue to work with communities to work with communities to ensure.
Senator McKenzie, order. Senator McKenzie, you rise to your feet and you wait. Senator McKenzie.
Madam President, there was an interjection across the chamber.
Why are you on your feet?
Directed.
Why are you on your feet?
Personal reflection. There was an interjection across the chamber to Senator Little and Senator Nampijinkrapras as Conservative Indigenous senators. Yes, it was. You said, take a look in the mirror.
Senator McKenzie, I have no idea which senator you're suggesting made the imputation. Senator Wong.
Thank you. I regret that Senator McKenzie did not do what the President has asked previously, which is to repeat the allegedly unparliamentary language. I think the convention in this place should be, rather than repeating it, if the request is to withdraw, that request should be made, rather than people repeating the language if there is a concern.
Wong's advice, and I would seek the senator to withdraw that
And
remark.
I'm sorry, I didn't... Which senator? Sorry.
Senator Stewart.
Thank you. Minister Wong, you've got 3 seconds left. Thank you. Senator Babette.
Thank you, President. My question is for the Minister for Finance.
Just a moment, Senator Bett. Please resume your seat. Senator Brown and Senator Hughes, order across the chamber. Senator Babette is on his feet. He's entitled to ask his question in silence. Senator Bett, please continue. Please begin again.
Thank you, President. Now, my question is for the Minister for Finance, Minister Gallagher. Minister Gallagher, we meet again. Minister, your recent social media post on X, formerly known as Twitter, claimed that digital IDs are not compulsory. Now, that post was labelled as potentially misleading. Minister, did you mislead the Australian public? Can your digital ID be compulsory? Or perhaps, Minister, are the fact-checkers wrong on this one? Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Senator Bett. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Babette for the question. Just for the record, we don't meet often at all. But can I say, and I haven't seen the post that he refers to, but the digital ID legislation makes it clear that the digital ID is voluntary for individuals accessing government services. The legislation makes that clear. I have also been on the record saying that for businesses, it is a requirement to use MyGovID for certain engagements with the ATO, and that is for security reasons and to minimise the risk of fraud relating to businesses and their transactions with the ATO. But the legislation is very clear that digital ID is voluntary and that government services must be maintained. Options for individuals to access government services must be maintained for those that choose not to have a digital ID. But the idea behind a digital ID is to improve security for personal information. And we know that Australians are very worried. About three quarters of Australians are worried about theft of identity, cybercrime scams, etc. And this is a really important way of reducing the risk and reducing the amount of personal information that's required to rent a house, to engage with government at times, to engage with the private sector as well. It's to about reducing it and allowing the person to control that verification of their identity.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Babette, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Now, the bill does indeed state that the ID is voluntary, but with multiple exceptions. Now, Section 74, as you would know, grants the regulator the power to compel the use of digital ID if they are satisfied that it is appropriate to do so. Is that true? Does the bill grant the regulator the capacity to mandate digital ID if they deem it appropriate to do so?
Thank you, Senator Babette. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. And I think this goes to the point that I've just made about the fact that digital ID is required for businesses engaging with, say, the ATO at the moment, or a director's ID to minimise the use of fraud. But in relation to a person, creating or not creating a digital ID for themselves, for their personal engagement with government, that remains voluntary. And in fact, the bill states that they must, that government services, because of course we can't mandate in the private sector, but in government services must maintain an option.
Oh, beg your pardon, Minister Gallagher. Senator Canavan.
Thank you, President. Just a point of order on relevance. The question went to the specific terms of the bill in section 74 and the terms of the exemption. The minister hasn't answered that part of the question.
Senator Canavan, I will remind you that you can't as I'm sure you know, ask about the detailed provisions of a bill that are before the Parliament. I think the Minister is being relevant to Senator Babette's question. So, Minister, I'll ask you to continue, please.
Yeah, and I answered that at the outset, which was reflecting the current arrangements at the moment for MyGov ID to be mandated for certain engagements with business or corporations, but not for individuals.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Babette, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Now, Minister, in the 1980s, your party proposed the Australia card. Now, a Labor Party backbencher at the time, anyway, Lewis Kent, said the card was un-Australian and it should be more appropriately called the Hitler card or the Stalin card. Now, many have compared your party's digital ID to the Australia card. Now, Minister, how will you ensure that the centralisation of ID federally will not be misused by any future governments? Thank you, Minister.
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. And the digital ID, and I said this before, it's not a card, it's not an ID scheme, it's not a new number. It's a voluntary, secure, and I actually don't think Senator Canavan understands what it actually is here, because it's about verifying your identity. It's about verifying your identity through your own control of the information that you share online to access services. And I would say Senator Babette is a business owner, a real estate agent. You would know from dealing with rental properties and things, the amount of information that you have to collect to verify potential tenants. This has the opportunity and the potential to significantly reduce the information that you as a business holder would hold in your own records about individuals that may rent properties off you, and that protects you as a business owner and it protects tenants of those rental properties.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Payman.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations, Senator Watt. This morning, the Senate passed the first part of the government's closing loopholes reforms. How will the reforms in the Closing the Loopholes Bill benefit Australian workers ahead of the festive season?
Thank you, Senator Payman. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Payman, who, like so many people over here, has done so much for Australian workers. And Senator Payman, today is an important day for Australian workers, employers and our economy. So, in the words of Senator Cash today, I say Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to all the workers of Australia. Merry Christmas to the victims of wage theft who now see end in sight. Merry Christmas to our first responders who are now protected as a result of our laws. And Merry Christmas to the many employers who do the right thing by their workers and for too long have been undercut by competitors doing the wrong thing. And finally, I say Merry Christmas to people like Brodie Allen, a mine worker in Blackwater in central Queensland, someone that you'd think that Senator Canavan, Mr. Fake Miner over there, would like to support, but of course we saw the opposite today. Mr. Allen gave evidence to the Senate inquiry on our new laws while it was in Rockhampton earlier this year. Mr. Allen has worked at the BHP mine.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Order across the chamber. Senator Canavan. Order. Senator Green. Order. Minister, please continue.
Mr. Allen has worked at the BHP mine in Blackwater for 7 years, seven whole years, and that whole time he was employed as a labour hire employee, which meant he was paid $40,000 less each year. And Senator O'Sullivan up the back there is groaning about the fact that someone has paid $40,000 less per year compared to their colleagues. And that means that over 7 years, Brodie is $280,000 worse off than his colleagues, doing exactly the same work as him. Well, today I say to Brodie that as a result of the Parliament passing our Closing the Loophole laws, relief is inside for Brodie and for many others like him. As a result of the laws the Parliament passed today, labour hire workers will no longer be underpaid. But the record will always show that the Liberals, Nationals and One Nation today voted for workers like Brodie to continue being underpaid, and they will never forget it. Shame on you.
Thank you, Minister Watt. Senator Payman, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. And thank you, Minister, for that response. I don't know why those opposite hate workers so much. But this morning, the Senate voted to close the wage theft loophole.
Order.
How will the government's wage theft reforms protect workers' wages and ensure a level playing field for law-abiding businesses?
Thank you, Senator Payman. Minister Watt.
Thank you again, Senator Payman. Well, I think many Australians are surprised to know that until today it was not a crime for employers to deliberately steal from the wages of their employees. And today this parliament has closed that loophole. Now, of course, many underpayments are not wage theft. Most underpayments are a simple mistake, and our new laws won't catch any of this with this new criminal offence. But these reforms passed by the parliament today will ensure that intentional cases of wage underpayment will be a crime, as it should be. And that is all as a result of the Labor government's laws. And when the Liberals, the Nationals and One Nation had a choice today, they voted to protect bosses who deliberately steal from their workers' wages. You voted against the bill, that's what it means. You voted to protect employers who deliberately steal wages from their employees. People like those working for 7-Eleven who were paid their wages in full and then had to go to an ATM by their manager and forced to withdraw
cash. Thank you, Minister
Watt. That's who you voted to back.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Payman, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister Burke has said that boosting and protecting wages is a key part of the government's plan to help Australians deal with cost of living pressures. What are the barriers Australian workers face to securing their wages, and how will the government's laws protect them?
Thank you, Senator Payman. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. And Senator Payman, those barriers, they actually have a name. They have a name, Senator Cash, Senator O'Sullivan, Senator McKenzie, Senator Hughes, Senator Sharma. Even the newest person who arrived here in the Senate voted today to deny workers their fair share and backed in the bosses who are doing the wrong thing rather than those who are doing the right thing. The truth is that Senator Cash and the Liberal and National Party were caught flat-footed this morning, because while Senator Cash was on Sunrise this morning, stirring up more division, more focused on fighting than fixing the problem, the Albanese government was working hard with the crossbench to close the loopholes that have kept workers' wages down. As I say, today the Coalition had a choice to make. They could have voted to stop labour hire workers being underpaid. They could have voted to stop bosses deliberately stealing from their workers' wages. But to quote Senator Cash, she said, "I will always stand with the employers of Australia, even when they're deliberately stealing their workers' wages, even when they're underpaying their workers."
Minister,
shame
the
on
for
you.
Answering has expired, Senator Birmingham.
Yeah. President, my question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. Minister, after 18 months of the Albanese Labor government, and as Australians end 2023, Australians are being forced to live with a worsening per capita recession, with historic collapses in productivity, which Labor's industrial relations laws are only going to make worse, and amongst the most entrenched inflation across advanced economies. Life for Australians isn't easy under Mr Albanese, and it keeps getting harder. Why is Australia's economy struggling so much more than so many counterparts right around the world under this Labor government?
Minister Wong.
Thank you, President, and I thank the Senator,
Senator O'Sullivan,
for the question and for the opportunity to remind him, because it appears he has forgotten what it is that this government has achieved in its first 18 months. We've seen cheaper childcare, cheaper childcare for Australians. I know that that
Minister
is a problem for
Minister
you.
Wong.
Cheaper medicines.
Minister
I know
Wong.
That is a problem for
Minister
you.
Wong,
58 Medicare.
Minister, please resume your seat. Seriously. The minister was on her feet. She has a right to be heard in silence, not for the yelling to reach such a pitch that no one could hear me calling order. That is disrespectful. Minister Watt. Minister
I don't know
Watt.
Why those opposite are so upset by cheaper childcare.
Yeah.
I don't know why those opposite are so upset by cheaper medicines. I don't know what those opposite are so upset.
Order
why
they're
so upset by tripling of the bulk billing incentive.
Wong.
Tripling the bulk billing incentive.
Minister Wong.
I don't know why those opposite are so upset
Minister
by 480,000 fee-free.
Order. Order. Senator O'Sullivan,
I've lost count of the amount of times that I've called you this week. And most senators on my left, a number of you, I've called Senator McGrath, Senator McKenzie, Senator Cash. Your interjections are absolutely disrespectful. They are way too loud and they are disorderly. The minister has the right to be heard in silence. Minister.
Tripling of the bulk billing incentive, also opposed by those opposite. 480,000 fee-free TAFE places, also opposed by those opposite. And of course, the first budget surplus in 15 years. That really upsets you, doesn't it? You've never delivered it. You've never delivered one. No, you never delivered one in all those years. And Senator
Hughes. Senator Hughes, when you've quite finished, order. Order across the chamber. Minister Wong.
624,000 new jobs, and of course I could go on, but one of the ones I want to focus on is of course the fact that we are seeing wages rising for the fastest rate for a decade.
Order.
Wages rising for the fastest rate for a decade, including for minimum wage workers and aged care workers. And don't they hate that? Don't they hate that? Senator Hume, just the other day, this week again, telling us what she and the coalition really think. Oh, we can't have higher wages. It might lead to higher inflation. You've always been against higher wages for working people, and you were today. This side stands absolutely committed to providing better wages and working conditions for Australians, and that is a contribution to the cost of living for Australians, something you will never understand because you hate backing wages.
Senator Hume. Minister Wong. Order. Senator Birmingham, I'm not calling you right now. All right, Senator Birmingham, please resume your seat. Seriously. Senator Hume, Senator McGrath. This is a chamber in which people's views need to be respected, whether you agree with them or not. I think every person in this chamber has signed up to the Jenkins Review. And the way that you all responded, no, you're not in a debate with me. The way you all responded then was disrespectful and disorderly. Senator McGrath, when I call order, when I call your name, I expect you to come to order, not completely ignore me and yell in your loudest voice across the chamber. I'm asking you, I'm ordering you to listen in silence. That goes for people on my right as well. Senator Birmingham, first supplementary.
Here, here. Well, President, after 18 months of this Albanese Labor government, Australians are paying 27% more tax. The interest they're paying on their mortgages has tripled, and prices have risen by more than 9%. And contrary to what Senator Wong says, their real wages have gone backwards, backwards under Labor. Labor has broken promise after promise, including their promise for electricity prices to cut by $275. Why are Australians paying so much more under Labor?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. Order. Order. I'm not sure. Just a minute, Senator Wong. I haven't called you. I'm not sure who was banging the table down there. I have also drawn it to senators' attention this week not to do it. Order. Order. Minister Wong.
Yeah, we're the party of more jobs and higher wages.
That's right.
You are the party of lower wages and higher cost of living. I mean, the high to have the Leader of the Opposition in the Senate, no amount of shouting at me, will erase the fact you voted against electricity price relief. So every time you come in here and talk about cost of living, everyone will remember the party that put their hand up for higher electricity prices is sitting opposite me, so I don't have the heart to come in and talk about cost of living in here. You have always been for lower wages. Australians know that. You show that again today.
Senator Birmingham, second supplementary.
Thanks, President. Australians are really going to love hearing how good they've got it under the Albanese government, when in fact they've seen their real household incomes fall by 8.6% on a per capita basis. Indeed, they've fallen more than in any other advanced economy, forcing Australians to have to cut back this Christmas and feeling real economic pain into 2024. Rather than telling people how good they've got it, why don't you take responsibility and accept so many Australians are so much worse off under the Albanese Labor government?
Senator Birmingham. Minister Wong, I haven't called you. Once again, I am calling for order. Minister Wong.
No amount of Senator Birmingham shouting will allow people to forget, will cause people to forget that this is the party that voted against electricity price relief. This is a party that wants medicines not cheaper but more expensive. This is the party that actually wants more expensive medicine. This is a party that doesn't back increasing the bulk billing incentives. So if we want to make it easier and cheaper to see a doctor, they're happy for it to be more expensive and harder. And on this side, we want cheaper childcare and expanded paid parental leave, and we want more affordable housing. What do they want? Oppose more
Senator
affordable
McKenzie.
Housing. I mean, and but at the end of it all, President, the thing that really demonstrates their hypocrisy is they have always been about low wages. They will always
Thank
be about
Minister,
low wages,
the time
and they
for
were today.
Has
and
started.
I ask for.